Hi there. Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. We typically talk on this podcast about things like design thinking and student voice and choice and project-based learning and, you know, collaborative projects, all that kind of stuff. But right now I want to talk about something different. I want to talk about anti-racism. And, you know, my heart is broken right now. And I feel like I'm at a total loss on what to say. I am aware of my place of privilege, my lack of expertise in areas of justice and anti-racism. I acknowledge that I do not do enough as an ally. You know, I've been involved in protests that were, you know, for immigrants' rights and things like that. I taught in a Title I school, and I sometimes use those types of things to excuse my lack of a voice. I have a pretty big platform here, and I don't do enough to promote justice and to promote anti-racism. As a white man, I get it. I need to listen first and amplify the voices of others. And so I recognize that I am not an expert on this topic. I'm not trying to be an expert. Instead, what I want to share is an example of an anti-racist principal that I had. I only had him as a principal for 1 year, but he really shaped my world. And he continues to do the good work of dismantling oppression. My hope is that this example might provide some insights into what anti-racism looks like on a deep practical level. Please recognize that I am not an expert on this topic. And that's why I also have, if you go to the blog post, Anti-Racism Principle, so if you go to my blog that connects to this, I have a curation of resources from the true experts in the field, the people who are steeped in this work, the people who are living this reality. And I think it's important that we listen to them. So I want to start with a story. It was my sixth year of teaching, but everything felt new. I was in a new classroom, in a new position, photojournalism, at an entirely new school. They were in their second year. So when I heard the words, "we need to talk," from my new principal, I panicked. I sat down in his office and Raul said to me, "John, I think the morning announcements have been working well, but there's one change I want you to make." I nodded. "I noticed that you don't have any ELL students doing the announcements. Why is that?" It wasn't intentional. I put out a call for volunteers, and those are who I chose. "I know you value student voice, but it has to extend to all voices," he told me. Now, honestly, I got defensive. I wasn't willing to listen to him. I started talking about ELL theory and affective filters and the need for language supports that you can't do on the fly in the morning announcements. I shared how my ELL students were afraid to go live in front of the school. And Raul listened patiently to my response. But then he said, "If the system doesn't allow each student to have a voice, you need to change the system." The conversation became even more challenging when we shifted to race and representation. Our school was about 90% Latino and about 10% African American, but there was no Black representation on the morning announcements. "What message is that sending to students?" he asked. Now, I hadn't even thought about that. I wasn't thinking about the message. And to be honest, this wasn't intentional, but the fact that it wasn't intentional didn't matter. I had caused some pretty serious harm. So we talked about a plan of action. We came up with some next steps. But I left the conversation feeling raw and guilty and really frustrated. I wanted Raul to assure me that I wasn't being racist. I was. And that this mistake wasn't indicative of a racist system. It was. That it was merely an oversight. It was. But that oversight was indicative of something bigger. I wanted him to recognize that I had worked for years, first in the nonprofit sector and now as a teacher for justice, that I loved this community that I served. But Raul didn't center the conversation on me or my feelings. This was about our students and about how I was complicit in a racist system. So I modified the morning announcements. I changed the way I recruited. I had additional teams of students. And instead of going live, we pre-recorded the whole show so that my ELL students could practice their lines ahead of time. We retooled everything so that students had more of a voice in the format and style of the morning announcements. We created a whole news show, and it began to embody the voice of the students rather than my vision of how it should go. A week later, a teacher approached me in the staff lounge and said, "Can you do something about which students you have as anchors? I can't even understand some of them." And at that moment, Raul walked into the staff lounge and said, "If you can't understand a student, maybe you need to work harder at listening." And although he was speaking about hearing and listening to an accent, I think it was pretty clear that there was something deeper. Are we really listening to our marginalized students? And although I had never heard the term anti-racism, this was just a small example of what it was like to be in a school where leadership was actively anti-racist. Now, here's a snapshot of what this looked like. And this isn't a perfect list, but this is just some of what it looked like. Raul changed our system in terms of the approach to discipline. It started with a dress code, which he changed from uniforms to jeans and t-shirts. Now, he did that for financial reasons, but also because he didn't want to punish students for having baggy pants or a shirt untucked. He refused to suspend students for wearing baggy clothes or having skinny jeans. There was this spectrum of acceptable denim that you could wear. He just didn't care about that spectrum. He just wanted kids there and excited about learning. Later, when other schools were suspending students for dancing in the hallways, remember the Dougie? Can you teach me how to Dougie? It was at that time. Raul created huge dance competitions before school. And actually, it led to higher attendance. He basically said, "This isn't an issue. This is an opportunity." But it went beyond that. We also looked at the discipline data to examine bias and explore the racism within the system. I still remember when a teacher wanted to call the campus police for a child being disrespectful, and Raul refused. There were still consequences, but they didn't need to be criminal. He wasn't going to get a police officer involved. Raul actively celebrated our community and challenged white teacher perceptions about the neighborhoods around our school. When teachers said negative comments about parents in our community, he not only corrected them, but also made sure parents were part of the conversations around school improvement and school culture. One day when a teacher went on a racist rant on social media, he addressed this teacher head on, but also asked teachers who were bystanders why they had been silent. Raul empowered any members of the community who were people of color that were working within the school. He often ate lunch with the custodial staff, the secretaries, and the aides. I can think of one member of the evening custodial staff who had dropped out of college to take care of his dying mother. And because Raul took the time to get to know him, he ended up going back to college to pursue his dream of becoming a teacher. Raul also started a leadership conference for our students and was intentional about including local leaders of color. Now, this didn't mean that he hated white people. It didn't mean that he was giving a preference. No. It simply meant that he was saying, we need to make sure that we are empowering teachers of color. We need to make sure that we are having representation from our community. He also had us examine our curriculum for racism and bias. He had us review our choices of books in the library and in our ELA classes. When I taught a block of reading intervention, he asked me to design a whole system that was culturally responsive. he asked social studies teachers to avoid using the both sides approach to injustices in history. But as my friend Brad points out, Raul also fought really hard against low expectations and teachers who said, well, our students can't do this or can't do that because of where they come from. We had really high academic standards and we had really high academic performance. He also invited white allies to listen more, to parents, to students, to experts who know and live this work. He challenged us to examine our biases and to enter into hard conversations. It's easy to default to the idea of colorblindness and to ignore and deflect, but he would actively ask us not to. He also advocated publicly for racial justice. If you check out his Twitter profile, you'll see that he is actively engaged in the hard grind of local work around racial profiling and policing in Arizona. And this isn't something that he addresses only during a big national event. This is his life. It's what he does. Now, Raul's message was clear, that we weren't just going to be tolerant or even pro-diversity as a staff. He was going to ask us to dismantle oppression in our daily practices as educators, something I still often struggle with. I acknowledge that I am on this journey. I still benefit from racist systems. I recognize that I have not done enough as an ally or an advocate. But I want to share that story of Raul because I think it points to the reality that when a national event like this happens and we're talking about race, we have to look inside into our own buildings and into the systems and structures that we inhabit so that we're actually dismantling oppression and fighting against racism.